Scott Walterman with your worldwide news update.
Today, America and the world, in my view, lost a remarkable leader. He was a statesman and humanitarian.
Jimmy Carter, the peanut farmer who won the presidency in the wake of the Watergate scandal and Vietnam War, and then redefined life after the White House as a global humanitarian, has died. He was 100 years old. VOA's Cain Farbaugh.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
When Jimmy Carter took the oath of office on January 20th, 1977, he promised a government as good as its people.
There can be no nobler nor more ambitious task for America to undertake on this day of a new beginning than to help shape a just and peaceful world.
A world he continued to shape beyond his single term in the White House, becoming a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, heading the global nonprofit, the Carter Center. Cain Farbaugh, VOA News, Plains, Georgia.
South Korean officials said Monday they will conduct safety inspections as they struggle to determine what caused a plane crash that killed 179 people on Sunday. Reuters correspondent Ryan Chang.
The transport ministry said it would inspect all Boeing 737-800 aircraft operated in South Korea and look closely into its maintenance management systems.
The jetliner skidded off the runway, slammed into a concrete fence, and burst into flames after its landing gear apparently failed to deploy. A court warrant to detain impeached South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has been requested as the investigation of whether his short-lived martial law decree amounted to rebellion. This is VOA News. Incumbent Croatian President Zoran Milanovic fell just short of a majority in Sunday's election. He will face his main challenger in a second round in 2 weeks. Holding elections in Syria could take up to 4 years, Syria's de facto leader, Ahmed al-Shara, said in remarks broadcast on Sunday. It's the first time he's commented on a possible election timetable since Bashar al-Assad was ousted this month. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of State, Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, is a well-known China critic. VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching gives us a peek of his China policy if confirmed to be the next Secretary of State.
The threat that will define this century is China.
Rubio has proposed legislation to revitalize U.S. industrial policy and reduce dependence on imports from China. He also supports revoking the trade advantages granted to China, a position he defended as early as 2022.
We did nothing while for over two decades China methodically undermined our economic strength by stealing our critical technology, our manufacturing capacity, our jobs.
Rubio has advocated for empowering global partners against what he describes as China's growing economic and military aggression. Nike Ching, VOA News, Washington.
As the world prepares to welcome in 2025, Myanmar's Karen minority have beaten everyone to it. The ethnic people, the third largest of the country's many groups, decide the date of the new year based on the lunar calendar and the end of the rice harvest rather than with reference to the Roman system. It's recognized as a national holiday. There's a new board game coming out where players participate in an imaginary Chinese invasion of Taiwan. Reuters correspondent Sayakar Jasny explains how it's played.
Players face the challenges of war by role-playing characters in the 10 days ahead of an attack. Gamers use colorful cards to take on the guises of Taiwan soldiers, Chinese spies, pro-China politicians, and citizens defending their home.
The game hits stores in January. That wraps up this update, but the world in news never stops. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhibe in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
For instance, we are working on schistosomiasis. We're working on onchocerciasis, which is river blindness. We're working on trachoma. We're working on lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis. And we also are working on malaria in some cases. But in all of those cases, we use the same technique that we did with guinea worm.
That was former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who died yesterday, talking about the various projects his center is involved in Africa. Details coming up. Also, the situation remains tense in much of Kenya following fresh protests by young adults. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Leaders from around the world are paying tribute to former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who died Sunday at the age of 100. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa recalled Carter as an outspoken critic of the apartheid state. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi expressed his condolences to the people of the U.S. and to Carter's family. He praised Carter for his significant role in achieving the peace agreement between Egypt and Israel that will remain etched in the annals of history. Other world leaders praising Carter include United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, China's President Xi Jinping, and Pope Francis. Carter was a Georgia peanut farmer who was elected governor of the southeastern U.S. state before his election as president in 1976. He served a single term as president from January 1977 to January 1981 and was swept from office 4 years later in an electoral landslide by Republican Ronald Reagan, a former actor and California governor. After leaving the White House, he and his late wife, Rosaline, embarked on a career of activism. His Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia, has led the fight against several illnesses that plagued developing nations, including guinea worm disease in Africa. The center also monitored elections around the world and engaged in peace-building efforts in several countries. Rosaline Carter died in 2023. Plans already are underway for Carter's funeral, including a National Day of Mourning on January 9th and ceremonies in Washington, Atlanta, and Carter's hometown of Plains, Georgia. U.S. President Joe Biden is remembering Carter as a statesman, a humanitarian, and a dear friend. Biden said, "What I find extraordinary about Jimmy Carter, though, is that millions of people all around the world, all over the world, feel they lost a friend as well, even though they never met him. And that's because Jimmy Carter lived a life measured not by words, but by his deeds." President-elect Donald Trump also paid tribute to Carter in a post on his Truth Social platform, saying, "The challenges Carter faced in the Oval Office came at a pivotal time to our country, and that we all owe him a debt of gratitude." Former VOA White House correspondent David Gollust covered Carter's time in office and spoke with current national correspondent Steve Herman about the challenges and successes under the former president.
There were a literal cascade of foreign policy developments, problems that certainly bogged down his presidency toward the end of it, and it was just a four-year presidency, notably the Iran hostage crisis. This is not a foreign policy issue specifically, but the energy crisis of 1979, OPEC doubles oil prices, we have inflation running wild, and it was far worse than the recent spurt of inflation we had in the United States. It was way up there, and it was a great burden on his presidency and his popularity. You know, simultaneously, in 79, we had the American embassy in Iran taken over by Islamic militants, 52 hostages taken prisoner for 444 days. The president at the outset said that I'm not going to exercise military power to end this because it'll only make it worse. He was depicted as being, helpless in this situation. Toward the end, they attempted a military rescue of the hostages, which was a catastrophe in itself. And so, you know, by late 79, it was a pretty sour mood in the country, and his prospects were diminished, to say the least.
He did have one great foreign policy success, which is known as the Camp David Accords, bringing peace between Israel and Egypt. When you were covering that, did you think he was going to be able to pull it off?
No, because, we were in the aftermath of the 73 Middle East War. The parties were really at loggerheads or gunpoint, really. There were some indications that President Sadat of Egypt wanted to find a way out of this, and he made an early visit to Washington in the Carter administration. Begin came. President Carter was able to persuade them to go up to Camp David for the summit in September 78. There was no real expectation that they could actually do something. And, you know, after 10 days up there, they announced an agreement. It was a bare-boned agreement, but basically the Egyptians agreed to normalize relations with the Israelis, which was kind of a shocker. They had a basic framework for Palestinian self-government, which, you know, nobody thought that Begin would go for that. And also the third point was a general framework for Israel having relations with other Arab countries. And of course, Jordan became the first after Egypt. So it was surprising, maybe, miraculous, some might say, but it was the persuasive powers of the president getting these guys basically alone at Camp David, which is on a mountaintop about 40 miles from Washington, very isolated. Nobody comes in or out, and the leaders had nothing to do but focus on these issues, and it worked.
And some people say he achieved more good after he was president than during his four-year presidency. How do you think his legacy is going to be remembered?
Oh, quite certainly his post-presidential activities. He formed the Carter Center, basically his legacy organization, very, very soon after he left office, was able to raise a lot of money for it. And he immediately took off on some really notable projects, the elimination of the Guinea worm scourge in Africa. He was active also in the Habitat for Humanity, which is a U.S. program where housing is built for low-income people. It's worth noting he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002, so his work did not go unnoticed.
And that was former VOA White House correspondent David Gollest speaking with VOA national correspondent Steve Herman about Carter's time in the White House and his missions that followed. A Nigerian foreign affairs expert says Carter was Africa-friendly, leaving a legacy that started with his time in the White House and continued for the rest of his life. Dr. Nicholas Idris Erame cited the peace treaty signed by Egypt and Israel in 1978 and work by Carter's foundation to eradicate Guinea worm and fight other ailments. Irami is a senior research fellow and head of the Division of International Politics at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs in Lagos. He told reporter Mike Mbonye that Africa and the world will miss Carter for his contributions to peace and assistance to the less privileged.
In 1978, he masterminded the famous Camp David Accord, the signing of the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel. And also, his foundation, Jimmy Carter Foundation, assisted lots and lots of African countries, including Nigeria, to eradicate guinea worm. Your take on this, sir?
Yeah, you see, one thing about the Camp David Accord between Israel and Egypt, it was significant in the sense that it was historic in the that the agreement itself led to the first Israeli-Arab peace treaty. And if you look at what has been happening since that accord and what you have contemporary now, you know that if not for the efforts of people like Jimmy Carter, perhaps there have been more crises in the Arab region between Arab and Israeli. Even though the crises have still continued to persist, thank God, we can say it's a good thing that Jimmy Carter was able to strike at that accord because it continues to be a reference point to any issues about how to address the conflict or resolving the conflict within that region. It was not just timely, it was also significant. And don't also forget that that itself was the accord that also earned him the 2002 Nobel laureate. Yes. So in terms of being the American president and in terms of the American foreign policy, which was already nosediving at that period, that accord was very, very timely because, one, it helped to boost his candidacy. I mean, it helped to boost his personality, one, even the American foreign policy, and it was also useful, you know, in addressing long-standing conflict in the Arab Israeli world.
And what about the guinea worm eradication sponsored by Jimmy Carter Foundation?
My personal observation about him is that he seems to have, acted or performed so much in his post-presidency period as compared to his period within his presidency. And what this means is that apart from his legacies in the U.S. about issues about economy, energy security, and social justice, and equality, and everything, in terms of post-presidency and what Africa should do, in terms of contribution to Africa, you see, first, he was very much involved in the issues about addressing what they call pandemics, like guinea worms and other issues, one. And he had a whole lot of foundations that were really saddled with the responsibilities of helping Africa, Nigeria, and other countries, you know, to fight this guinea worm and other things. And he also had some other NGOs that focused about bringing about educations. And this not to also forget about his impact and his influence on conflict prevention, peacekeeping and crisis management across Africa, Nigeria, and the rest of the globe. So it is one of the good things that it was strong enough to master that position to ensure that he had so many NGOs, foundations, and donations that were in charge of addressing these issues, particularly the issues about guinea worm in Nigeria. Because we must accept the fact that that itself went a long way in ensuring that guinea worm itself was brought to a standstill in Nigeria.
Some analysts say former President Jimmy Carter was Africa-friendly and that under his tenure, Africa enjoyed the U.S. There was this harmonious relationship between U.S. and Africa. Do you think Africa will miss the former U.S. president?
In foreign policy, we always discuss the role of personality. And that is not to say that every other regime has not benefited Africa. On a one-on-one basis, Jimmy Carter had the African as his project, as his personal project. So he was so much focused on the person-to-person interaction in Africa. And he was so much focused on what African can be, how African was going to lift up from his current predicament into being a global power to be reckoned with. So, and it was no longer surprising how and where he continued to ensure that most of those NGOs were focused around working in Africa. So you like it or not, many people in Africa liked him so much because of his open diplomacy, because of his open-hand negotiations, because of his open-door policy of interacting with Africa. So I think that in his death, Africa also lost a friend.
That was Dr. Nicholas Idris Irami, head of the Division of International Politics at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. He spoke with reporter Mark Mbonye by phone from Lagos, Nigeria. In the late 1980s, years after he had left the White House, former President Jimmy Carter was touring villages in Ghana when he first encountered people with guinea worm disease. Cases were averaging 3.5 million a year globally at the time. But thanks in large part to the efforts of the Carter Center, the disease has been nearly stamped out. His efforts to eradicate this horrific disease improved the lives and well-being of many of the world's poorest people. In 2014, I had the privilege of talking to President Carter regarding guinea worm disease in Africa.
Hello, this is Jimmy Carter.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
My name is Yehagis Wuhib. Right now, I'm an international radio broadcaster here at the Voice of America.
It's good to talk to you.
It's an honor and a privilege talking to you, sir. Mr. President, Nigeria recently eliminated guinea worm disease, and at least 15 other countries have also rid themselves of the illness. If the disease is spread through water infected with larvae that are microscopic, how do you guarantee that it won't easily return? Meaning, does that country would have to have a modern water sanitation system or a constant testing process?
No, they can still drink water from the same rain pond as before. But what the village has to do is to make sure that nobody goes into the pond water waiting or to get another drink of water with guinea worm emerging from their bodies. So if the adult worms don't go into the water and lay new eggs, then a year later, if everybody does that, then a year later, you won't have any more guinea worm ever unless somebody comes there from outside and goes into the water with a guinea worm coming out. So
have you had, have you had to work with religious leaders who initially may be suspicious of the intentions of outsiders in the area?
Some of the religious leaders with whom we worked, either witch doctors or some others, have contradicted what we've said because they claim that the disease is caused not by guinea worm eggs in the water but by other means. Curse of God or confluence of planets or drinking goat's blood, things of that kind. So we've had to recruit whenever possible to get the religious leaders to be partners with us instead of opponents of our program.
Is there anything you'd want to add, Mr. President, about efforts in Ethiopia, Mali, or Ghana?
Well, I think the main thing to add is that we now know every case of guinea worm on Earth. We are concentrating on supervising these people to make sure they don't spread the disease to other people. And we have had a very good reduction in the number of cases in all of the countries in the last year. And we are very confident that in the near future we'll have complete success.
Are there lessons from the successful campaign used against guinea worm disease that could be used in efforts against other diseases, including polio?
Yes, we use the same technique against a number of other diseases. That is to go into a village to convince the leaders that we're there to help them, to let them know that they have to do almost all the work. So we're now dealing with a number of other diseases ourselves. For instance, we're working on schistosomiasis. We're working on onchocerciasis, which is river blindness. We're working on trachoma. We're working on lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis. And we're also working on malaria in some cases. But in all of those cases, we use the same technique that we did with guinea worm. That is to recruit as many of the leaders as possible, including the president of the country, the minister of health, the village chief, but also as many volunteers as we can. So the technique that we use on guinea worm basically is the same as we use on other diseases. Of course, all of them don't involve, treatment of pond water.
Mr. President, I hope you success in your work. And
good luck to you. We love your country, by the way.
Oh, Ethiopia?
Ethiopia.
Yeah. I mean, all of Africa loves you anyway, but Ethiopia, you have a special place.
Well, I feel that way. Well, yes. Best wishes to you, and thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Goodbye.
That was an excerpt of my conversation with President Carter in 2014 regarding his work to eradicate guinea worm disease from Africa. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehagis Wuhib, in Washington. The situation remains tense in much of Kenya following fresh protests by young adults and members of Generation Z. The protests are against the government's failure to identify, arrest, and prosecute those responsible for a series of abductions and disappearances of government critics. From Nairobi, reporter James Shimanyula has more.
In the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, police on horseback fired tear gas canisters at protesters Monday.
We are peaceful people, united, and never be defeated. Gen Z, power!
human rights groups, victims and activists say security agents wearing masks and dark glasses have used unmarked cars to abduct more than 100 unarmed young critics of the government since June. The Kenyan government has denied it was responsible. According to human rights groups, more than 60 protesters have been killed in the protests. In June, thousands of protesters took to the streets across Kenya to oppose legislation to sharply raise taxes in an effort to cut the national debt. After weeks of often violent protests, President William Ruto abandoned the legislation and said he would engage more with the public to find a way forward. Kasmueli Makoure is a leader of the Kenya Youth Group and one of the country's prominent activists.
Now what we are on the streets to demand is Ruto must go. It is very clear clarion call that we will not tolerate this system. This system most definitely will not work for us. We are on the streets to overhaul the entire system. Let that not be mistaken for anarchy.
Shakira Wafula is a member of Generation Z.
Occupy everywhere, because young people disappearing are from all walks of life, are from different areas in the country.
Lisa Sari is another demonstrator.
I don't want to hide the fact that I am one of the Gen Z members. Looking at the way young people have been kidnapped and disappeared without trace, it looks like the abductors will finish us. That's why we are protesting today.
Kenya law professor and regular commentator on social issues Patrick Lumumba says the protests may get worse.
There is a volcano that is still waiting to erupt and erupt positively. The Gen Zs, they are back with a bang and doing the things that we thought they would stop doing, and that is sad.
Political analysts and social observers in Kenya have described the protests as the biggest since the country's independence 61 years ago. For VOA Africa, this is James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
And in our sports roundup, we have our sport analyst, Mokbil Yabaro. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So in Africa football news, the African Nations Championship draw will happen tomorrow. What are some of the surprise teams?
Nigeria is a very, very big team that regularly doesn't make this competition for whatever reason. The Africa Championship, the African Nation Championships, is a competition that is held on the continent. The superstars that play for their respective country have to also play in the domestic leagues in order to make it. So, for instance, Nigeria is one of those teams where most populous country in the continent, probably has one of the most soccer stars internationally. But if you play outside of the country or even outside of the continent, you cannot participate in this tournament. It's basically to highlight the domestic talent within. So Nigeria making it into this tournament this year is a huge thing for them. Niger also made it. Sudan is a surprising team with all the level of unrest and everything that's going on in the country. For them to be able to make this is huge for the country. So, yeah, those are just a few of the teams. And this tournament will be held between February 1st and the 28th of 2025. So in a few days, the new year will start, and it will be held in Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda, an East African tournament.
And staying with football, the English Premier League had some action-packed games over the weekend and a few today as well. What were they?
Yeah, so we're going to start. We have to start with Liverpool. They are clicking on all cylinders, looking like this is their season to win or their season to lose, shall you say. At the top of the league, they are currently leading by 8 points at the top, with Nottingham Forest being the closest to them currently in that second slot, but they have an extra game that they've played. So if Nottingham Forest, if Liverpool is to win their next game and Arsenal loses, then that means that they will be up about 11 points from the top.
And that's our sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro. Thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.